day when something strange came my way. I didn't want no trouble, didn't want no fuss. Seen a man and asked what lust was, another day.
Hi, this is Fiona, Big Mama's Pirate, and I'm here in Old Street in London with
Miss Cookie the Cutter.
Hello, Miss Cookie, how are you?
I'm alright, darling, how are you?
So, I have a question for you. To sing blues, do you have to drink bourbon?
I don't think you have to, but it helps. I mean, I know I got this voice through, you know, smoking a lot of hard smoking, hard drinking, hard living. Some idols did the same. I mean, Big Mama Thornton, Bessie Smith, Amy, although her drink of choice was gin, I believe, Bessie. And I don't think you have to, you know, I don't think you have, but it can help.
So what's your drink of choice?
Depends on who's paying.
Fair enough.
So, you call yourself Miss Cookie the Cutter. Where did that come from?
Well, the story of how I got the name Cookie is a bit of a long and weird one, but I'll try and cut it down for you as much as possible. Basically, a few of my friends and I were in the Mixer in Camden, and there was like this group of skinhead kids, and some of them are known on the scene as being like neo-Nazi skinheads. And then all we could see, me and my other friend, she's black as well, and all we could see was just this guy looking at us really kind of weirdly, and we're thinking, oh, what's going on there? So a few weeks later, we're in this punk gig in Streatham, I think it was, and this little skinhead girl comes up to me going, oh yeah, really sorry about my friend, he was and I was like, what? She goes, oh, because he was making Nazi salutes and saying your skin colour's wrong. And I was like, oh, okay. And then she said, is your name Cookie? And I said, well, no, but I kind of like that. And she didn't know my name for the longest time, so I just started using it, and so that kind of came, that's how the cookie bit kind of came. And as for the cut bit, I was going to call myself the Killer, but you know, that's Jerry Lee Lewis, of course, and you know, can't really do that. So then I was reading Dr. John's biography, and like his autobiography, and I thought, and then I was reading, like, I think in the first chapter or so, he talks about in New Orleans when he was growing up in the 50s and 60s, they'd go to the clubs and they'd have all the musicians having what they call cutting contests. So you'd have like one guy say playing the piano, you'd have another guy come up, and obviously you'd have to try and be equally as good or better than the last guy. And I mean, you know, if you suck, then you know, they get stuff thrown at you and you get kicked out of the joint. But so I thought that was quite cool, because you know, then I'd hear people talking, saying, oh, that cat's really cutting, like, and I thought, well, you know, use that, that'll work. So that's how that kind of came about.
So you cut it?
I do.
Yes, you certainly do. I've just heard you sing. I just want to bring you back. So you got your name because this girl just randomly came up on the street and called you Cookie.
Yeah, that's how I got it.
So do people come up to you on the street randomly a lot and call you names?
They can, but I don't think I'd like to go into what names exactly they call me.
Any examples?
We'd be here all night.
How did you find the 88s? You say that you started searching through 88s when you were really young. So how did that all start?
I don't know. I mean, we had this little keyboard, like just tiny little Casio thing, when I was about maybe three or that. And I just remember I used to just bang on it. And I've always been the only real musical one in my family. And then I don't know. I started listening to songs by ear, and then like figuring out melodies, like just simple kind of right hand things. And then as I grew up, I got more and more into it. So I mean, everything I've done, I've taught myself. Really, I've never had a lesson in my life, and I mean the most I've had is there was a really, really good boogie woogie piano player who plays in the Brooklyn Boogie Boys, Big John Carr. I went round to his one night and he showed me just sort of like some basic left hand movements. That's all I've had in terms of lessons. But yeah, I mean, just sort of like through listening to old records and figuring out what styles I like, and not so much trying to copy, but taking inspiration from that and figuring out what I like and what I'd like to sound like. And I mean, I'm still learning. I'm learning all the time. So. But I mean, that's really sort of how I began playing.
When you were going through them first, who did you find that you liked? Who would have been your biggest inspiration at the time when you started going through your 88s?
I don't know, really. I mean, to be honest, I didn't even really sort of think about piano players as piano players until I really got into kind of blues and boogie woogie. And I mean, there's so many other. I mean, I'm really into like Jay McShann right now, and and all the old sort of like Boogie Woogie Greats, Amos Milburn, Albert Ammons and guys like that. And I'm really into sort of girls who can play a bit of Boogie Woogie as well, because I mean there weren't many, there certainly aren't many now, and there weren't very many then, but Hedda Brooks I really like, Cleo Brown I love also because she, one of her songs is called Looky 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 Here Comes Cookie. Love that one. And yeah, loads of people, I mean obviously I kind of dig in a bit of Fats Waller, and you know, I love a bit of stride piano. I haven't mastered yet because it's very very hard, but I mean I love that style. And I mean I love all the old New Orleans stuff. James Booker's one of my favourites, and Dr. John of course, and guys like that. So you know, just love anything like that really.
You're from East London. Okay, how does it feel to be a blues singer from East London, and how does that work?
I don't really know how it works, but I mean, you can have the blues anywhere, but I guess East London's a pretty, if you want to think about it traditionally, I mean, there's a lot of hard living going on there, you know, sort of it's not the nicest place to live, so, I mean, I take a lot of that, and sort of, you know, yeah, in my music. I mean, I wasn't actually born in London, I've only lived in London for the last 10 years, I was born in Nigeria, and we moved here when I was 10. Like permanently, so but I mean obviously I saw kind of bad things out there, and so yeah, I mean it's just sort of like life. I mean if I've been living in, I don't know, Chelsea or Hampstead, I'd probably still be a blues singer as well, because I guess it's like in your soul. I mean it is just in your soul, sort of like no matter how hard or how not good, I mean even if you've had sort of a relatively really nice life, you know, everyone's got problems, everyone's got the blues, I say, so I don't think it really matters where you're from.
Cool. I've got another standard blues question for you. With blues they say you kind of have to live life, and if you haven't had a life, as in if you're not like singing, if you not live like 50 years, yeah, how can you sing the blues? What do you say to that?
I really don't. I mean, someone said this to me the other night after I'd done a gig. She came up to me and she was like, you know, I just find it really astonishing because you must be in your 20s and, you know, but you sing like a woman who's really lived. And I just didn't really know what to say to that. I said, well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've probably seen a lot more in my... Well, I don't know about a lot more, but, you know, I've seen enough in my 20 years. Well, nearly 20... Well, 21 years this August that... A lot of other people have my age, and likewise, I mean, I meet people who are younger than me who sort of, you know, I mean, I know people, family, friends, who their parents have died and they're still very young and having to look after their, you know, their siblings and sort of having to take on, like, the role like, of the head of the family. And, I mean, so I don't know if it sort of really matters like, about how young you are. I think the defining factor is how much experience you've had, because you can have a lot of experience and still be very young. So I guess that's what it all comes down to as opposed to age.
So you're only 21. You're not even 21.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. She's a very beautiful 21-year-old, almost 21-year-old. So why is your piano called Axel?
Simple as the fact that I'm a big Guns N' Roses fan, and Axel and Axl Rose plays piano. My piano's a bit of a reddish colour, and Axl Rose is a closet ginger. So
nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely nothing wrong with gingers, I think. And I think probably it's one of my favourite hair colours, I have to say. And I think you're very beautiful. I'm a little bit almost ginger myself. Not as nice as yours, Fiona.
Oh, you didn't have to say that. But thank you. On the MySpace, you say that the pain in your heart is part of your band. That's a big statement, particularly when I've just realised that you're only 20. And I know we've kind of gone through the whole blues thing and why you sing blues, but yeah. Explain a little bit, I guess. That's because it's a big statement for...
I mean, it is, you know, I mean, we could sort of take any kind of one aspect. We could take men, for instance, of, you know, I've been messed around a lot, and I mean, I know I'm only 20 and I really shouldn't care, but the fact is I do, and sometimes I fall too hard, and yeah, you do, you always care, no matter how much you don't want to. So, I mean, I haven't ever found anyone to sort of treat me very well as yet. And then I mean growing up, you know, I had a pretty hard time. I got picked on a lot in school, and the kids were, I mean, you know, I went to an all girls Catholic school in East London, so the girls were rough. They called me things like coconut because, you know, supposedly not as black as them, and just because,
because you're not as black as theirs.
Yeah, because I'm not sort of, you know, talking like they are and listening to their music and, you know, hanging out on the streets every night and taking drugs and all that kind of thing. And I've always sort of felt like a bit of an outcast from, you know, from then. And I mean, there was that, and then, you know, I mean, I can't really sort of complain about my family life too much because, I mean, me and my mum get on each other's nerves, but I still love her, you know, to the, and you know, my dad as well, and my brother. I'm lucky I've had sort of quite a good family, my immediate families. There's all kinds of problems with the extended family that we really can't go into, but, no. I mean, that's part of it as well. And, I mean, just sort of everything. I mean, I'm not saying I've had a particularly sort of depressing or hard life, but it's been hard enough for me to have enough pain in my heart, so.
So does your mum and dad, do you have siblings?
I do too, a brother and a sister.
So they all come to your gigs? What do they think about you singing the blues?
Well, funnily enough, because my mum's not into this sort of music at all. My dad was always the one who was into it. I mean, when I was younger, I remember my dad sort of playing like John Lee Hooker, Muddy Waters, and stuff like Louis Jordan, and even like Artie Shaw and guys like that. And you know, I've nicked all his good CDs now, so he hasn't got any left. But my dad's always been sort of into it. So my dad kind of loves what I do. My mum isn't into it whatsoever. I remember my dad was playing some jazz once. She was like, "How can you listen to this? You can't sing along to it." And it was like, "Mum, you know, just it's not about that." But she really likes it. My mum hasn't got a clue that anything I play in with a 12-bar beat, she's like, "Yeah, I really dig all this Elvis music you keep playing." You know, I mean, I got ready to go out the other night. She was like, I was wearing like a little sort of like track jacket and had my hair in like a little pompadour and all that. And she was like, "Yeah, you know, you look just like Elvis." I was like, "Mum, I haven't got a clue." I mean, my brother and my sister, sort of, they're not into the music at all, but. I mean, I've got a very supportive family, so I'm lucky with that. They haven't actually been to any of my gigs yet. My mum keeps saying she wants to come, but she's so embarrassing, I don't let her anywhere near.
She can't be that bad.
Oh, she is.
You wear flowers in your hair, and they look very pretty. So what's your favourite flower, and why?
Favourite flower, I guess I'm going to have to be really, really cliche and say red roses.
Oh,
just because.
It's not cliche, it's just natural.
It is, you know, that's guys or women, no matter what they say, they all love red roses, you know.
Oh, do, yeah.
Yeah, not that I've ever received any, so, you know.
Oh, I don't believe it. It says that when you get drunk enough, you'll sing the blues on the streets with only the aid of your hand clapping. So, just for the moment, you've had one gin. Could we pretend we're on the streets somewhere and you might give us a little demonstration?
All right. I won't do any hand clapping because I'm wearing these really noisy bracelets and you'll obstruct everything. So. I hate to see the evening sun go down. I hate to see the evening sun go down. Well, the men I love done left this town. If I feel tomorrow like I feel today, if I feel tomorrow like I feel today, I'm gonna pack up my bag and make my getaway.
That was beautiful. You've got an amazing tone to your voice. And I'm just dying to get you out in the street and another gin so we can get the clapping with it. Wow. Okay.
Might get a bit of that later.
Yeah, later, after the gig, we'll get you out in the street. Okay. Honky tonk demons and angels. What are they?
I mean, you know, to be honest, I was just sort of like thinking of how I could make that sound, like how I could make my influences sound like interesting. But I guess Hank Williams Sr. is a classic example of a honky-tonk demon. I mean, that was a tortured soul. And even if, you know, Hank sung a love song, he still sounded depressed, you know. So, I mean, and that's one of the things I love so much about him. And just every single note Hank sung, you could hear the pain in his voice. Angels, I guess, you know, you'd have girls like K-Star and a bit of Patsy and... You know, and even sort of like Bob Wills and guys. But I mean, Bob Wills is a bit of a demon at times. But you know, it's just like sort of the contrast of you think of. Because I always think of like country honky tonk as like the white man's blues, because there's such a parallel, you know. And, I mean, that's why sort of, you know, honky tonk singers would cover a lot of blues songs, and you know, well, not so much vice versa. But you get a few. I mean, you know, I used to do a lot of Hank songs and a bit of Charlie and Arthur and stuff like that in my set. So, I mean. I just think it was just an interesting way of thinking about the different sides of it, really.
You've got such a range of names of people that are involved in blues. How long have you been absorbing this? I mean, how long have you been reading up about these people? And could you sit here all night and talk about blues people?
I probably could, but it might not be very interesting. I mean, I don't know about how long I've... Probably ever since... I mean, because, I mean, as I said to you before, but I'll say for the benefit of the listeners, as a kid, you know, you kind of go through... I think it's natural for kids to go through all kinds of musical phases. So, I did the punk rock thing. I then got really into psychobilly. Because I was sort of quite into, like, 50s kitsch as well at the same time. So it was, like, a nice, like, marriage. Then I got really into rock. Because I just... Every single thing I was listening to, I was like, well, God, there's got to be something, like... more rootsy than this. I want to know where this comes from. So, you know, when I was into punk and hardcore and psychobilly, I then started listening to a lot of rockabilly and then got into, like, a lot of early rhythm and blues and then finally got back to blues and early jazz and things like that. So, and I mean, I'm just a firm believer in sort of doing your research if you're, you know, if you're going to proclaim to be into something. I mean, I know a lot of kids who, you know, who walk the walk but cannot talk the talk. You know, a lot of kids who dress up, you know, perfectly, their hair's always done nicely, but they don't know nothing of that. And there's this one boy I know who, his name I won't mention, but who I see out quite a lot. And I remember when I first met him, all he'd ever say was, yeah, I mean, you know, this boy looks great, you know, hair's always immaculate, always wears the right clothes, you know, like, he looks like, you know, 50s and a teen idol, but all he'd ever say was, you know, oh, I love Elvis, but I hate rockabilly, but I really like doo-wop. And he'd only ever know, I think, like, one doo-wop song by the Platters or something, you know. And, you know, I tried to have a conversation with him once about music, and he couldn't tell me anything. And, I mean, I found that with a lot of people. And I just think it's a shame, because I think if you're going to go around proclaiming to be so into something, then you have to know about it. So, I mean, yeah, I've been reading up on this for a while and sort of anything I can, and... Because I just really wanted to know about sort of, you know, what I was listening to, and especially, you know, I'd listen to songs, I wouldn't really know what they were talking about, so I'd want to, you know, go back and look at, try and figure things out. There's still things I don't really know about, but, you know, I'm always learning, as, you know, as you do, so...
So, talking about the look, you certainly have the look. You've got fabulous hair. I'd love to know how long it takes, and I'd like you to describe your hair to the people that will be listening to this.
Well, I guess my hair today is pretty lazy, actually. Just like 1940s, like five bangs, like a little roll at the front of my hair to look like a fringe, and got the rest of it shoved into a snood or a hairnet. I've got like a little scarf around my head as well, tied up in a bow in the centre. Thank you very much. And as for, it doesn't take me that long to do my hair at all, because mostly because I don't really do it properly these days. I mean, when I could be bothered, I'd, you know, set my hair in rollers, I think every other night or something. I haven't got the time anymore. So, you know, it's either, you know, into a hairnet or a rag or in a ponytail. And I mean, it doesn't, so once you know how to do rolls, you can cheat rolls as well. All you do is you either sort of wrap your hair around your fingers or around a roller, you stick a pin in and then, you know, slide your fingers or the roller out. And there you go, in whatever shape you want. And as for the look, I mean, I've always sort of, you know, I've always kind of dug in a retro. So I remember, like, loving La Bamba when I was a kid and things like that, and Grease, and although, you know, that's not too credible now, but, you
know. They just have to take it off the stage.
That's true. It's very true. But, yeah, you know, so I've always kind of liked that. I mean, I haven't, oh, goodness.
Cops are after you, Miss Cookie.
Oh, dear. But, I haven't been dressing like this for... I mean, I'd be lying if I said I've been dressing like this, you know, for years and years and years. I don't know exactly how long I've been dressing like this, but... Yeah, I mean, it's just a style that I found and I'm comfortable with, you know. I mean, I look at old photos of myself when I was, you know, younger, about 15, and when I was into punk, and I looked a complete mess, and it's just, you know, so... I mean, this is just kind of a style I found that I was comfortable with, and, you know, I mean, I love, you know, vintage clothing and, you know, and just vintage style and everything. I mean... I'd be lying if I said all my stuff was vintage, because being a big girl and not having a lot of money, it's hard to find sort of original 40s and 50s clothes. I got this lovely little 60s but in a very 40s style handbag that's beautiful, has little moulded cherries in the handle and looks like a little treasure chest, and cost me, I think, 30 something quid in there, but it was worth it because I've just been living out of this handbag now. But I mean, You know, I mean, my big thing is charity shops. I love charity shops. I mean, because I don't live too far from Essex, so I'm always in, like, Barkingside, and they've got the best charity shops there. And, you know, they've got the 50p rail, which is my favourite thing. I mean, I bought one of my favourite drinks, the 50p rail. Like, they have, like, oh, it's wonderful. I mean, I bought, one day I went in there, they were having a sale, and everything was 50p. I think I spent about a fiver in the end, but I came out with about, I don't know, four massive bags of stuff. So, you know, so charity shops are good. A lot of my stuff, like, is also my mum's. My mum's got sort of old dresses from the 40s, not from the 40s, from the 80s, that look very, for maternity dresses as well, that I really don't know what that says about me wearing my mum's old maternity dresses. But, you know, and I used to, before I could afford, like, a decent pair of 40 style lady slacks, I used to wear my dad's trousers, because my dad's, you know, a fairly big man. So, you know, I got, like, you know, the wide leg I was looking for. So, I mean, that's that, really. And if you want any more style tips, just, you know, message me on the MySpace.
We're now going to start Miss Cookie's column for fashion. Okay, Miss Cookie looks really classy. If you want to see her, you can go to her MySpace. How many people are in your band, and how did you meet them?
There's four of the band, including me. And, well, I met Phil, the bass player. I met, he plays down the Black Gardenia every Friday. And I was in there once with my a couple of friends, and they were like, oh, you should, because there's a band plays there. Monkey's Uncle are brilliant, like, kind of sleazy, like, jazzy. Blues kind of thing, and they were playing, and my friend Shaz was like, she was like, go on, get up there and sing. And I was like, don't want to. And she literally pushed me up on stage to sing, like, a couple numbers with them. And I mean, that's kind of how I met them, and, like, hanging out in that bar with them. That's how I met Phil, the bass player. Andy, the guitar player, is a friend of Phil's, who was down the Gardenia one night and heard me singing, and thought, oh, I really have to do something with this, like, with this girl. Danny, the drummer, I met when I was doing the jukebox jam, the Christmas one, and he was playing drums with him, Little Victor. And I just thought, because, you know, I've met a lot of drummers in my time. We've got what I call lead drummer syndrome, who kind of always have to be, yeah. Fiona's nodding, she understands. All, you know, reckon they've always got to be in the spotlight, and Danny is not like this at all. And I think you notice that a lot more when they sort of blend. But, you know, Danny's full of lovely surprises. Like, me and the band have actually only ever had one rehearsal, and during this rehearsal, which was all a bit rushed as well, because we had a gig that Saturday, and I'd been very disorganised. But we were playing a version of Junko Partner, and I'd started playing, like, this New Orleans-y kind of piano rhythm, and then Danny just came out with this killer, like, parade beat, and just little things like that. You know, he's great. And I mean, so yeah, when I met Danny at the Jukebox Jam, I said, oh, listen, you know, I'd really love to do some work with you sometime. He said, yeah, look, here's my number, give me a call. Turns out he's played with a lot of people I've played with as well, so it's kind of funny how things all, and turns out that he knew Andy, the guitar player, very well as well, because I was with Andy once down at the premises on Hackney Road. We just spent a whole day going through loads of songs, and he said, oh, so who've you got playing for you on Saturday? This is the Black Cotton gig, the first gig we all did together. And I said, well, I'm trying to get this guy Danny to play drums. He said, Danny, is he? Described him, and I said, sounds like the guy I know. And then it turns out they knew each other as well from years back. They've been in the same small, yeah, very, very small world, especially on the scene, I think, because there aren't that many musicians, well, not as many as there should be. But, and I mean, a lot of them have been sort of knocking around for ages, haven't they? I mean, guys like Big Joe Louie and Lil George were brilliant, you know, brilliant guys who have been, you know, knocking around for ages. So everything sort of comes back around, and it's just like a little family, isn't it, really? Which is what I love about the blues scene as well. The musicians are all very talented, very lovely people.
Yes, they are. Okay, I have a question for you. I've had a few tonight, but this is another one. Okay. If you were a famous leader, anybody, could be fictional, true, who would it be?
Leaders and political.
Leader, yeah.
Oh, man, I don't know. Oh, God, I don't know. Oh, this is such a hard question. I mean, I remember being, when I was a kid, I was sort of very interested in Che Guevara, even though, I mean, I guess he wasn't sort of strictly a leader, but, I mean, I just love the fact that, he, you know, he had such desire, and he's more of an icon, isn't he, really?
Well, he was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he did, but, I mean, not in the sense that he sort of really governed a country or anything like that, but, yeah, he should should have. He could have done a lot. You know, I mean, Fidel was in power for too long, but the less said about that, the better.
We're not going into that.
No, I mean, you know, Fidel did some good things, but it's just, I guess, with anything, you know, sort of, you know, you're there for too long, and things just sort of, you know, just don't go as well as they could have or did in the beginning. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, people like Martin Luther King, I've got great respect for, and I don't know if this is weird, but I would have loved to have been around in those days when, you know, when things were kind of so hard for black people, and sort of, you know, to have been there when the first sort of bits of integration and that were, you know, like sort of, you know, was starting up. And I think it would have been a very dangerous time, but a very exciting time to have been. And I mean, I would have loved to have been a part of that. And I mean, if I'd lived to this day and said, you know, yeah, I was there when, you know, when this happened, and you know, I was the first black woman to do that. I mean, so kind of, and maybe something in like kind of that era would be good as well. And I mean, obviously, being Nigerian, I know a bit about the political hardships. And you know, the problem with us is that we haven't had any good political leaders so far, really, or not for a very long time.
It is definitely
time for one. I really hope it gets sorted. I mean, I hadn't been home in about 8 years since I left. I think since I'd left, I'd been home once. I think the year after we came, and I hadn't been back for about 8 years, and I'd forgotten just how terrible things are. And I mean, when you have a country that claims to be civilized, but where you have where people just expect to have power cuts for months on end. I mean, my grandma's living there, you know, and she's surprised when sort of like the running water comes back on. And this isn't even the village. This is in the big city in Lagos, you know. And that said, I mean, you know, you go to Abuja, the new capital, and all the money's been invested in there, which is wonderful, but at the same time, it's not fair, because I mean, you walk down the street in Lagos, and I mean, I've always said, if you can walk down the street in Lagos in the daytime, you can live anywhere, because you know, there's no pavement, cars, you know, I think the speed limit in Nigeria is 120 or something, but even that, no one sort of sticks to. It's ridiculous, you know, and there's all kinds of crazy things. So I mean, I think it definitely is time for a change in that part of the world. And Africa in general, I mean, it's whenever I think about it, I do get really upset. It's such a shame, but I don't know, maybe someday, hopefully.
That kind of leads to my next question. So if you were Che Guevara, where would you want to lead?
Well, I mean, you know, Cuba back then was pretty rough. So I mean, it would have been pretty exciting to, and it would have been a good thing to have been part of, to, you know, to eventually sort of like lead Cuba or that kind of thing. You know, that would be good. I think that would be pretty interesting. That'd be a pretty interesting thing to have done.
We have one thing that we like to ask everybody that we interview, and it's just a small thing. We're called the Pirate Pods, so we like everybody to do a pirate impression at the end of their interview. Aww. So when you're ready.
Arr, me hearty. Or I could do a bit of Jack Sparrow, but I won't. No, I really can't. I just thought I'd say that.
Okay, Miss Cookie the Cutter. No. Miss Cookie the Cutter. Thank you. I've had no gin. Don't believe a word she says. Miss Cookie the Cutter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
It's been wonderful. Now I get up in the morning for something to eat. Though I go to work, I leave and brush your teeth. Come back in the evening and you're still in a bed. Got a rag tied around your head, oh baby. Tell me what you gonna do.